So we shall be beginning our fourth year or third year, what is it? Fourth year, I think, studying the Bhagavad Gita. Third year, okay, yeah, good. Yeah, the third year of studying Bhagavad Gita. Usually it is the way that we are proceeding. It is a five-year course. So it should be third year or, yeah. So, in the last session, we completed the sixth chapter. It is good to take a look at what we have studied in brief so that we can now connect. It was a long gap, summer, and then in summer you were busy, all of us doing various different things. So it is good to again recapitulate a little bit of what we had studied. Bhagavad Gita is a unique scripture in the world in various ways. It is the only scripture that I know that was preached on the backdrop of a battle. The battle was just to begin. People, the warriors on both sides, had unsheathed their weapons. They were to strike. At that moment, the scripture, the Bhagavad Gita, is told. So, in that sense, it is unique. Also, it is universal in the sense that you may belong to any country, you may be following any religion, it doesn't matter at all. It is the science of living a goal-oriented, a purposeful life. We all want to lead a purposeful, goal-oriented life that will bring ultimate satisfaction in our life. And that is what we are looking for. It is a very specific human characteristic that we want purpose for our actions. They are not just instinct-driven, purposeless actions, which most of the other animals, to the best of our knowledge, those actions are instinctive. There is no purpose. They have to do it because there is no choice. They are slaves to nature. And so they have to do those actions. Human beings, on the other hand, they have a purpose, sense of purpose. What will I achieve by doing this action? Is it worthwhile? If it is, then I will proceed. Or otherwise, I may not go for that action. That choice is there. And therefore, we feel that there should be a goal in life. It should be like a journey, and there has to be a destination for journey. So life can be looked upon as a journey where there is a destination. And therefore, we need proper guidance to take our journey to the right destination that we were looking actually for. And what is that destination? That is also told by Bhagavad Gita. Also, it is told how one can proceed along various different paths suitable to our constitution. It doesn't really depend on what we believe and what we don't believe, whether we accept some God or we don't accept God. It's fine, you know, whatever it may be. And we can still follow this course because it is not divorced from rational thinking. You can think, you know. It is, in fact, Bhagavad Gita always encourages us don't just believe because somebody is saying it, but just give it a very strong thought, an intense penetrative thought. Run over the whole thing under this light of reason, and then pursue it. And also, it tells us about how the hindrances come in life in following that path, even if we know the path, and how to overcome those hindrances. As we know that it began on the that day war was about to start, and then Arjuna, who was the chief warrior, main warrior on the side of that righteous side, not the unjust side, but the just side. And he knew that he has to perform this war. He knew that it is his duty to get into the war. But when the moment arrived, earlier he was bragging very that I will just show how to these Kauravas, these misguided fools, they will learn only by my arrows. And all that he was saying. But when the moment arrived, he saw that the immensity of the situation dawned upon him. When we have to take a decision, intellectually one takes the decision. But when, if it is a very momentous decision that will have far-reaching and revolutionary consequences in life, then at that moment when we are going to implement it, the mind starts, you know, rethinking, mind starts kind of becomes nervous. Nervously, then, and feel scared also that what will happen if I take this decision. That decision of going to war was like that. It was a terrible war, as Arjuna could see that. It was going to be a very comprehensive, all-encompassing war. Very destructive. Also, he knew that it is who will win, who knows. Also, he knew that whether he will survive or will not survive, you cannot tell. On the other side, there were great warriors with whom he had to fight, like Bhishma and Drona and Karna. Most of them had never seen a defeat in battle before, and had told, Bhishma had already told, that there is not a single warrior on the face of the earth who can defeat him. Same thing was told by Drona, that it is impossible to just kill me if I am with all weapons ready fighting. And so, and they were telling the truth actually, not that they were just bragging, that is their position. So Arjuna knew exactly what he is up against. So also on both sides there were all kith and kin, closely knit family members on both sides. They are likely to get killed. So that all that comes to the mind of Arjuna, and his resolve of fighting the battle now started shaking. So He told Lord, after telling him that, take my chariot in between the two armies so that I can see whom I have to fight. And that itself is a sign of weakness. He already knew to whom he was going to fight. And he didn't need for that chariot to be taken in the middle of the two armies. There was no need. But he was just buying time. Thinking, you know, that how to beat retreat from this terrible situation. The honorable and safe exit he was trying to find. The situation was very overwhelming for him. So he wanted a breathing space because the weapons were already unsheathed. Pravritte shastra sampate, that is the words of the Bhagavad Gita there. That dhanurudyamya, weapons were taken out of their sheaths, and the arrows were already put on the bows. So it was just the conch, they were all blown. It was a custom that to declare the war, to begin the war, used to blow conch. And all the great warriors on both sides, they have already blown the conch, as described in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. A very beautiful description. The names of the conch of each of them, that also is given. And the first beginning of the war, the conch was blown from the not from the Pandava's side, that is not from the Arjuna's side, but from the opposite side, their general, Bhishma was their general, and the conch, first conch, as per the description of Bhagavad Gita, was blown by him. And then followed by all others. Everybody started blowing their conch, and then now the war is about to begin. And here Arjuna tells, well, first take my chariot in between the two armies. And then when Arjuna's chariot, and Lord Krishna is the charioteer, he is after all chauffeur, like a chauffeur, you know. Chauffeur doesn't tell you where to go. You tell chauffeur, take the car there, I want to go there. And Lord Krishna doesn't argue. Okay, as you say, you want the chariot to be taken there, here I take the chariot there. And after Arjuna now looks at the army, now he is looking with a different eye. He is not looking with the eye filled with the spirit of duty or strength. Now he is looking with the eye of attachments, the eye of weakness. And so now with that eye he is not seeing any enemy to fight with. All my, I and mine, that is seen on all sides. On both sides, I and mine, that is seen. That is the tangible expression of ignorance in our life. Sri Ramakrishna therefore says that what is Maya or ignorance, don't keep on just philosophizing. It is I and mine. That is Maya. That somebody you feel is mine, try to hold. And then it is wrong really, because everything truly belongs to God. Or if you want to look at it from the point of view of this knowledge, don't want to get into theology, you can say that it is all one reality. There is no other. So I and mine is this problem in our life. We associate one heap of flesh and blood and bones as I. Call it as I. Like this flesh and bones and all
Yogatmananda calls, this is Yogatmananda, I. And a similar heap is called you. And then there are so many heaps, some heaps I choose as mine, some as not mine. One heap gets called as my husband, my wife, my father, my so and so. And that is the ignorance. That is, therefore, we get attached and bound by these things. And we don't know now what to do. Our sense of right and wrong all gets then mixed up because of now the dilemma of I and mine. It is the sense of justice gets muddled up, sense of right and wrong gets muddled up. It is because something is now I and mine. It is all very, becomes so complex. The simple one reality now becomes very, very immensely intricate and complex. Because this heap, one fellow calls as I, and the other heap as you. But that other heap, somebody else calls as that as I, you know. So, see the complexity. This is not really I, because Vishwanath, he calls that as I and this as you. So, there is no real, truly I and you. It is all not defined at all. There is no clear understanding of it at all. Full of tremendous confusion. And Arjuna, caught into that confusion, wants now to run away. When we are faced with an uphill task that we had resolved to do, when we face that overwhelming immensity of it, then we feel, no, let us not do it now. Let us postpone it. Let us give another thought to it, and so forth. It is Arjuna was a very intelligent person, good rational and all that was there. He started therefore giving a big lecture to Lord Krishna that how it is good not to fight the battle and let us get away from here. We don't care for kingdom. We don't care for victory. Even if we have to go and beg our food, I don't care. Even if those our enemies kill us, I don't care. I do not want to fight. But he was not feeling even satisfied with that decision. He could see the problems with that decision too. And therefore he wanted advice from Lord Krishna. Lord did not support his decision. He in fact banged him. Told him, what is this nonsense that you are thinking? Where from this weakness has overtaken you? It is, just think, what is this? You have just become coward, that's all, in the face of this overwhelming situation, and want to present that cowardice as something very nice and philosophical. It is, if Arjuna has just said that I am overcome by cowardice, I have overcome by weakness, I am feeling not very comfortable, that is one thing. But Arjuna philosophizes it. That is what we do, that is what our tendency is. Even if we know that what we are going to do is not exactly right, because I am intelligent, I am educated, I am learned, I will bring 100 reasons for that. That is how we use our intellect to defeat ourselves, to do harm to ourselves. because we then don't do the right thing to make our to intellect should be used to remove our weakness. Instead, we use it to make ourselves more weak. Arjuna was doing that, and Lord Krishna said, well, get rid of this weakness. And Arjuna understands, he was already having this, that it is not really right to get away from the war, but I don't want to fight either. So he says, oh Lord, I am taking refuge in you. Please advise me, take me out of this terrible mire of suffering. Arjuna describes his suffering there because of his being caught in this conflict. It is, and we all go through these conflicts. You know why this is Bhagavad Gita is so important to us, that all these conflicts come in our life may not be with that immensity, but at our own small levels we always face these conflicts, sometimes very big. Like, well, I have to enter into matrimony with someone. Now, it is an immense thing that may affect my whole life. If I am sincerely going in for that, then, wait, let me think. Because it is an immense decision. Should I not? What will happen? One keeps thinks about those things. One gets, torn between the emotions. You want to do something that is going to have big repercussions in life, then one waits and looks at it, and is kind of in the conflicting situation. Should I do this or should I not do this? And in between that conflict, there is a lot of suffering. The mind is kind of stretched between there's two opposite forces, pulled but in two different directions. And therefore, there is a lot of strain on it, a lot of pain involved therein. And everybody experiences it. I don't think there is anybody here who has never experienced such things. May not be to the extent of Arjuna's this dilemma, but we all experience these dilemmas now and then. That even the small dilemma also, whether shall I go to Bhagavad Gita class or just sit at home. It is, both tendencies come, it is a small dilemma comparatively. There is this work that I need to do first, that thing I have to finish first, Bhagavad Gita after all, what is there, I can read it, and later on I can try to understand from the Swami, or I am intelligent enough, I have heard the Swami and many other Swamis and other scholars several times, I don't need to actually go. There is the conflict basically, and that situation in the middle is rather painful. So Arjuna said that, please take me out of this terrible situation. What should I be doing? Tell me. And while telling, you are my teacher, he said, and I am your disciple. These are the words of Arjuna, that Shishyasteham Shadhimam Tvam Prapannam. I am your disciple. Please take me out. I take refuge in you. Tvam Prapannam. I surrender to you. I take refuge in you. I don't see how can I resolve all this. And after telling this, there is a very funny statement, again, very psychologically, it is very important. It depicts our mentality. We say to the teacher, oh, please take me out of this, I surrender to you, please, I am so troubled here. My Arjuna said there that I am suffering so much that every pore of the body, all my organs, they are kind of losing all their vitality. It seems that I am getting drowned. So please take me out of this. And in the same breath he said, but don't tell me to fight. And then what, you know, you say that, oh, take me out of this, I am your disciple, tell me what to do. But I tell my the decision also there, don't tell me to fight, that I am not going to fight. Now, Lord sees all this, that behind this apparent conflict and the suffering that comes from it, we have to analyze, you know. Diagnosis is important. Without diagnosis, you cannot give the treatment. You have to diagnose what is wrong. And Lord does such a wonderful analysis there. That and we can look into that, you know, we have to tally it in our lives too, that in Arjuna's case and in our case too, this suffering is coming from the attachments. Because we are attached to these things, when there is the time to get away from it, wherever there is a possibility to get away from what we are attached to, a pain comes. A pain comes that many tell me, and it is a very familiar emotion. It happens to me too, that whatever I get attached to, I know that I should and I have to. There is no choice really to get away from it. But when I get away, there is the pain. Why this pain? Because of the attachment. There is the glue. You know, if two things are glued, if you want to pull away, there is some tearing that happens there. There is some tearing that happens. It has to happen. There is no choice, friends. You cannot have it glued either. That is also a pain. To have it glued, if you say that, well, why then tear? Just let it remain glued. That is also a pain, a bondage, you know. Basically, that is the bondage. And then if you want to tear, it is such pain and suffering. Why this happens? Because of the attachment. That attachment is the cause of this suffering. Friends, let us remember, there is no suffering that we have to go through that does not come from attachment. Every suffering comes from attachment. And how this attachment comes? What caused this attachment? Lord sees that the cause of this attachment is the very wrong, mistaken, erroneous understanding of who am I and what the world is. This understanding being erroneous, all that follows that error gets into that. And therefore, one gets attached. Just to give you an example. I have this understanding, I am so and so. This is the world. This is a basic mistake. Now in this basic mistake, then arise now the secondary mistakes. Something I like. Something I don't like, is it not? Automatically, I want something, I don't want something. Now, therefore, suppose I feel hungry, and then I see that my hunger creates automatically the food also for me. It is, that is the psychology of it. That then I see a banana, let me eat that banana. Now, I take it, I eat it, and then what happens in that process is this ignorance becomes stronger, my attachment for banana grows. It is that banana or whatever, you know, it is just a symbol. I get attached to those things. And it is then very difficult to separate. What is the mistake there? That really I am everything. I don't need anything. It is that knowledge will remove this separation, remove the so-called likes and dislikes, and then we will be on a platform where the attachments will not bother us, will not have therefore the suffering associated with them. It is, Lord tells, look, you know, who dies? You are worried about, you know, you will be killing somebody, somebody may kill you. What is this killing? Look at this. The soul cannot be killed. And the bodies, they are subject to death anyway. You are not killing at all. Do you think that the bodies will go on? If you don't kill, are they not going to be dead? They are going to die anyway, and the soul is immortal. You cannot kill the soul. So look at the reality penetratively. This is what we need to do. Give a penetrative search to our understanding of who am I and what the world is. And that will help us to see that the I that never changes. It goes through the stages of the transformation of the body. That beautiful verse comes there. Dehinosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yauvanam jara tatha dehantara prapti dhiras tatra namuhyati. That just as in this body the soul experiences the changes, like I was a little child, an infant, a little child, then a youth, an old man, and the next link in the same cycle, is change of the body. That is the next tatha dehantara prapti. That next link is the body is now too worn out to be of any use. So you leave the body. That is going to happen. Why do you worry about it? Did you worry that when the child grew and became young? I was a child, you know, I became a young man. Nobody grieves. It is a natural process. It is accepted. Nobody weeps about it. You grow old. Well, yes, that is a natural process. Maybe a little painful. I didn't want to. But yes, it is to be accepted that you become old. The body is subject to all these changes. And in all this, did we notice that the soul did not change at all? My youth, my childhood, my old age, and similarly my change of the body. What is there to worry and grieve about? Did you grieve when you became an infant to a child? No. Did you grieve when you became a child to a youth? No, you didn't grieve. Did you grieve when you be from a young man or woman, you became an aged person? No. What is there? It is a natural process. It has to happen. And therefore, don't worry. The soul is immortal. It is all, they are all the, you were the same. Your body kept on changing. It is, there are many analogies that one can look into for these, you know, for this understanding. Like you change from one house to another house, the dwelling places go on changing. Not that you lived all your life in the same house. Even if it is the same house, it underwent lot of changes. You remained the same, the dweller remains the same. So, this separation, you know, deha and dehi, the body and the dweller of the body. This is a very big step, friends. And this is to be noted, understood. And this, if we remember this, we will see many, many problems that we face will be solved. This distinction, the body, different from the dweller of the body. It is just as if your house needs to be painted. It is now wear and tear happens to the house. It needs some painting from time to time. Understood. Do you think that I need to be painted? A house needs to be painted, you see. It is not I. That understanding is very clear in us, that house needs painting, not I. So, similarly, we should have this understanding that the body is young and old and is born and is dying. Whatever is born has to die. There is no choice in that. It is. Even the Lord Krishna who gave this message also had to die. There is no immortality in the body. But where is the immortality? In the soul that never dies. It is never born, it never dies. So, what happens in the ignorance? That is the job of the ignorance, to misplace the things. So the immortality that is associated with the soul, we misplace it on the body. And I think that the body also should be immortal. And we get attached to it. And therefore we mourn the death. We celebrate the birth, mourn the death. But the birth, it means death, you know. It is the beginning of the death. Is it not? From that day, the person started dying. After, say, 75, 80, 90, whatever years, that process completed, that's all. The death started, the countdown, let us say, started with the birth. Now you keep on counting. We cannot do the countdown because we don't know the exact age that the person will be dying at. But that is how the death is. Birth and death are not really very different. It is it may sound very depressing for some, but we should be bold, you know, and we should be courageous. In our understanding and in analysis, we should be fearless. And we should not be buffeted, or we should not be bothered by our likes and dislikes. And we should be fearless in our analysis. Yes, birth automatically means death too. So, there is no point in rejoicing in birth if we are not going to rejoice in death too. Death is also a point, a thing to rejoice. Wow, that person was caught in this body. That body was getting old. And now got a new body. Very good. Do you grieve when a person sells his old rickety, non-functional car and instead gets a new, very nice one? Do you grieve for that? No, it is similarly, the change of the body is like that. So this knowledge was given to Arjuna, that it is, the soul is immortal. Moreover, it is all-pervading. Our true identity is all-pervading. It is immortal, it is all-pervading, and it is the source of all bliss that we seek. We seek happiness, but it is to be sought where it is. And just as when you want something, you go to the where it is available. You want milk, you go to the grocery store where it is available. You don't go to the jewelry store to buy milk. You know, it is not available there. It is not sold in the jewelry store. So when you want joy, everybody wants joy in life. So, find out where it is available. We should be rational, isn't it, friends? That if we want joy, we should go where it is available. Simple thing, just as you want milk, you go where milk is available. So, you want joy, so let us go where it is available. Find out where it is available, and you will see that it is with you. It is in the self alone that you can get joy. A little analysis will be able to convince you about it. No person, no object can ever give you joy. It can give you bondage, no doubt. But it cannot give you joy. The joy comes from your within, because there it lies. And the outside object or person may give a little suggestion. But if you feel that it is coming from there, then you are caught. You are bound and joy disappears. It is like this. If you see that you can get water from the faucet, and then when drink the water and you feel, wow, I feel better now. I was thirsty, I got water. Now, water made you your thirst go away, not the faucet per se. If you keep on licking the faucet, your thirst will not go away. So similarly, the faucet was a secondary source, that's all. But really, the water that quenched the thirst. Similarly, if we analyze, all joy has always come from within. Always. So, this knowledge is very important. And Lord assured Arjuna that this knowledge is not a theory. Because when we hear this philosophy, then we feel, sounds all right intellectually, but can this ever be a practical experience? And Lord, in the second chapter, 39th verse of second chapter, assures Arjuna that, you see, I now tell the path by which, the practical side of it, by which this will become your experience. What is your intellectual understanding will become your tangible, practical experience. And that process is called yoga. So now it is all yoga. Yoga is transformation. Transform our understanding, transform our actions, and transform our emotions, transform our whole being. So that now we can see the things correctly. Like if a microphone is just a few inches away from me, But if I am looking in the opposite direction, and I say, there is no microphone, what are you talking? There is, oh, you now turn. Intellectually, I was convinced that, you see, there is microphone there. Look, I am speaking into it. Don't you hear it from the speakers? So it is, it must be there behind you. But to see, now you have to turn yourself. You turn and then you see. So similarly, we have to turn our life. And technically it is called turn it away. Change it from bhoga to yoga. Running after the objects, that is bhoga. You run after this and this and this, and you run after one object thinking that it will bring you satisfaction. Then after a little while you know that it is not going to bring, probably I should run after another object. Again you start running after chase, keep on chasing. And somewhere wisdom strikes. Maybe I am making mistake somewhere. You don't get what you were seeking, the happiness, by running after them. And then you become ready to turn, change the direction and go. But then I have to come back to my steps. Microphone was just right here, but I thought it is there. Then I ran there. Now, I know I ran a lot in the wrong direction. So don't worry. Start going in the right direction. Turn. That turning has to come in life. And then walking in the right direction. And then we are all set. And the knowledge will shine in our life. For sure, there is no ambiguity at all. That if you are following the directions to a place, if you are following it right, you have to get to that place. There is no ambiguity about it. So, similarly, there is no ambiguity. And this is yoga. Lord told in the chapters, in the second chapter, he concluded that by telling that how the life of this person becomes. The life is completely changed internally. Not that externally the fellow grows two horns or something. The life of a person of wisdom, or as it is said, steady wisdom, is full of that inner bliss and serenity and peace. There are no feeling of hatred towards anybody. There is no such conflicts about anything in the world. The vision is clear. The immense bliss is always there. There is no desire in that person. Because everything is available now, why desire? And desire is because we don't get what is, we want something. There is that want. That is desire. A feeling of lacuna. That is gone from there. So, that is the life of that person. And then, it is told gradually that how one should transform the actions. Do the actions with the spirit of dedication, the spirit of detachment. And in details, in chapter 3, 4, 5, Lord had told that how our actions can be a vehicle for our journey, our transformation in life. The actions are to be done in the right manner, with the right attitude. Then they get called karma yoga. This word karma yoga is known to many people. And it is a fashion, especially in India, to call somebody who does lot of work or has accomplished big, big works. They call that person a karma yogi. But friends, people doing big works or small works doesn't make them karma yogi per se. Karma yoga doesn't depend on you are performing big actions or small actions. Whether you are continuously active or you are doing work for a little while, it is not dependent on that at all. It is solely governed by the attitude in your work. And that attitude, if it is right, that is the attitude of detachment. It's a matter of practice, friends. It may not come in one day. In fact, it will not come in one day. But over the years, if we keep on doing it, the life will change. Definitely. I have seen so many examples, and not a single counter example, because of which now I can very convincingly say that this change does take place in everyone's life who attempts it and goes in the right earnest. It does happen. So, Lord showed that, and in the sixth chapter, he gave the science of concentration and control along with this details of this karma yoga, and told that therefore Arjuna, you must practice yoga. That is how we concluded the sixth chapter, that the last verse of sixth chapter was last but one verse, that yogi is therefore greatest amongst all, because yogi achieves the goal. So, therefore, tasmad yogi bhava Arjuna. Arjuna, therefore, you become a yogi. And then, the difficulties about yoga were also discussed. And he now, Lord is going to tell Arjuna, and that he hinted in the last verse of the sixth chapter, that amongst all yogis, the one who takes me or the God as his own soul and devotes himself or herself to me, for that person, yoga becomes very easy, and therefore, that yogi is the best according to my opinion. And now, that is going to be discussed in the seventh chapter, that how to devote oneself to the God. Devotion plays a very, very important role in our life. Devotion means emotions turn towards God. Love turned towards God, that becomes devotion. So, love towards our worldly objects and persons, that creates bondages. But when that love is turned towards God, then that becomes devotion, and that liberates. That makes us yogi. So, this is the idea here. And in the 7th chapter, from 7th chapter up to 12th chapter, these chapters are technically known as the chapters on the yoga of devotion or bhakti yoga. Not that other things are not discussed, but mainly it is focused on how the mind is to be turned. Why it is so important? Because for most of us, our actions are determined by our emotions. Very rarely they are determined by our reason. We call ourselves rational beings, but if we examine, we will see that our actions are mostly guided by what I like and what I don't like. Then I bring rationality to support what I do. Like if people ask me, And why do I eat chilies? Now the fact of the matter is that, the truth is that I like it. But then I bring rationality, you know. Because you know it contains vitamin so and so. As if because of that I am eating, no? It is. I am eating it now to support it. I have to bring in something. So, it is like that. Our emotions, they are the guiding factor. And therefore, these emotions are to be turned towards God. That is called Bhakti Yoga. When these emotions are turned in the right direction, the life will be turned in the right direction. Otherwise, it is impossible, let me tell you. If there is no bhakti or devotion, we can keep on saying, I am the follower of the path of knowledge. I don't care for devotion and such things. Well, there is only a rare Buddha or some Shankara who could honestly say that. Others just will brag, and when these objects of sense pleasure, they will come before their eyes, all the knowledge will get drowned or get into the drains. It is only those who have that tremendous power of discrimination, and where the reason is so powerful that it governs, it has the governing power of all the actions, that person can be called really a rational person. We brag about rationality, but most of us are not rational at all. It is our daily behavior is enough to tell us that it is our emotions which govern us. So it is very important, friends, that our emotions are turned properly, and the first verse, therefore, is that Lord is going to tell in the beginning of the 7th chapter that it is Lord is the most important thing. Why you should turn your emotions to Lord? Because everything that you want in this world, you will get in one place. Lord is the big super mall. That you go there and you will get everything right there. So if you go there to Lord, nothing will remain unavailable to you. Everything will be available in one single place and free of cost. So it is, therefore he says, Maya Sakta Mana Partha Yogam Yunjan Madashrayah Asamshayam Samagram Mam Yathajnasyasita Shrunu. Listen, how with the mind intent on me, taking refuge in me and practicing yoga, O Partha, you will know me in full, free from doubt. So we shall continue the discussion by the grace of God next Friday. So we'll conclude with the closing prayers because there isn't much time for questions today. So all the questions can be taken up next Friday.
Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarayi Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukha Padmadvinesrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantra Tasya Namani Yane Karma Pyekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna Arpanamata.